And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. I'm Mike Harrison, Real Estate Investor Radio host and proud member of Lifestyles Unlimited. Spent the last 15 years transforming my financial life through single-family and multifamily real estate. Thousands of doors, many states, five different states. And every week, this show's about helping regular people change their lives in the same way I did. And I've got a great show for you today. I want to talk about real estate cycles and where I see we are. But I did bring receipts from people a lot smarter than me that seem to agree with the positioning of the market. I would say right now we are entering a recovery cycle of real estate. Real estate cycles run 5 years typically, historically, and that's from peak, the high end, trough, and then you hit the recovery. Okay, so 5 years. So what I'm seeing, the metrics today are trending to the positive. They're much better than compared to where we were just 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So if we take that theory 5 years and we go back, that's 2021. Most investors, including myself, would agree that 2021 was definitely the peak. Some people would say, no, it was early 2022, but 2021 for sure. And I'll give you a personal reason why I see that. I put a home up, one of my rental properties that I'd had for 5 years for sale in 2021. 5 or 6 years. Yeah, 6 years. I bought it in 2015. When I put this home up for sale, I was shocked. I had over 20 offers on the property within days. Okay. I mean, it was like this thing just, I mean, it was a gasoline fire. I mean, just took off. 20 offers. And ended up selling that home, accepting an offer within a week to 10 days. And the person that bought the home paid $15,000 over the asking price. Now, I mean, is this an expensive home? No, it was a $300,000 property. But that property was just going crazy in 2021. It was a great time to sell. You look at rental property or just homes in general for sale today, there is just an exorbitant amount of homes for sale and very few buyers. It's the worst it's been in 40 years. But what I'm seeing right now as a real estate investor, both single family and multifamily, I'm seeing the positive trends start to come through. It's my belief that we are entering that recovery period. It's just such a stark difference than we were simply just 2, 3, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. What I want to discuss today specifically is the Dallas-Fort Worth market. It's a great place to invest and why Dallas-Fort Worth makes sense. I've got some facts to support my case, so I hope you can stick with me. But Dallas-Fort Worth is a market poised for growth. Let's talk about opportunity and where it's happening in real estate right now is Dallas-Fort Worth. If we look beyond national headlines and just drill into regional fundamentals, Dallas-Fort Worth stands out. Why does it stand out? I'll give you several reasons, but let's start with population growth and expansion. Dallas-Fort Worth is one of the fastest growing regions in the country, and there's some estimates out there that have it at 36% growth since 2010. Based on that, Dallas-Fort Worth will overtake Chicago as the third largest metro. And that's information from BizNow, B-I-S-N-O-W, if you'd like to look it up. Why does it matter? Well, more people means more renters and more new households, right? People come into Dallas-Fort Worth is going to equal sustained housing demand. And population growth doesn't just happen everywhere. This is a structural trend in Dallas-Fort Worth. And it's not, you know, this tailwind isn't just a number, it's decades of demand renters and owners alike that's building up. Employers, they're growing their footprints in Dallas-Fort Worth. I see it every day. Financial hubs, tech companies, corporate relocations, the number of data centers being built here. Corporate relocations is huge. And what does that mean? It means jobs and it means workers, and workers need housing. Okay, so there's so many companies coming. Also, I think what's going on in California, this 1% wealth tax, you're already seeing these billionaires, basically, they're done. They're out. They're pulling out. They're not going to engage in this California wealth tax that just passed. New York City, there's so many people that are going to get the heck out of there just because of the proposals and the laws that are being passed to punish those that have worked their whole life and saved and made the right decisions. And so those people are saying, enough, I don't have to put up and pay with this. I'm going to Florida. I'm going to Tennessee. I'm going to Texas. But Dallas-Fort Worth isn't just attracting people and companies. It's attracting capital, massive amounts of capital. Have you ever heard of something called Y'all Street? Not Wall Street, Texas style. Y'all Street. It's the Texas Stock Exchange. It has just come online, but that just shows me another signal that institutional money is seeing this region as a long-term powerhouse. And you just don't build a stock exchange in a weak market. So yeah, Y'all Street's online, and it couldn't come at a better time. All we need is one of the Wall Street gems, and they're already open. And Goldman Sachs is building a brand new corporate office in downtown Dallas. I'm not saying they're leaving New York, but they sure might shift quite a few of those people, those workers, from New York City to Dallas-Fort Worth. Job growth equals demand for rentals. A better employment base improves occupancy and rent growth potential. And economic diversification means less risk from a single industry. Dallas-Fort Worth is not a one-trick pony. Houston, you may recall, was pretty much, it's still the energy cap of the world, but Houston's much more diverse than it was in the 80s. But when the oil crunch hit in the 80s, I mean, I lived in Houston. I was born in Houston. I went to high school in Houston. Times were tough. When the oil crunch hit, the whole city took a downturn. But Dallas-Fort Worth's never been a one-trick pony. But what Dallas-Fort Worth is really good at is the banking side and the tech side of things. And both of those are just growing exponentially. The capital side, just opening the Y'all Street Stock Exchange here in Dallas-Fort Worth. But it's one thing to buy in a market with demand, and it's another to buy in one where jobs are actively being created. If you've listened to me for any amount of time on this show when I analyze an investment, one of the first things I look at, no matter where it is the economic fundamentals. Are they growing? Are they expanding? Is the job growth expanding? Is the wage growth expanding? That's important to me because I want to put a rental property. You know, I'm not holding this. I'm not a flipper. I'm holding it for a number of years. I want to put a property. I want to put an investment in an area where there's going to be continued growth, right? So the value of the investment goes up. That's why we're investing. In Dallas-Fort Worth, the market fundamentals are strong. And let's just look at, this is from BizNow, Dallas-Fort Worth continuing to attract investment, corporate presence, and development activity across several sectors. So the real world investor implication for you, more corporate presence is going to bring more millennials. It's going to bring more families. It's going to bring more professionals. And that's going to cause retail and mixed use growth. That's just further reinforcing housing demand. All that growth creates demand. Now, many of you out there are probably going, okay, Mike, you made a case for demand. Let's talk about supply, right? The 600-pound gorilla, because we've had an overabundance of supply. So you're saying it. Let's dig into it. Supply dynamics. Let's talk about why right now is a great entry point. And stick with me because I've got a third statement I want to make on now, right? Let's focus on the now. But let's get to that. The multifamily pipeline is cooling. What do I mean by that? We've gone through years of nonstop building. I mean, apartment complex after apartment complex after apartment complex. I mean, they were just getting thrown up. Keep in mind that it takes, if you say, hey, I'm going to build an apartment complex right here, that's a six-year deal. It's going to take 2 to 3 years of planning, getting the design teams, the drawings, the land acquisition, the permits, the zoning, the whole nine yards. So if you wanted to build an apartment community in 2018, it probably didn't come online till 2024. 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, things were off the chart. So you can see why there's been so much multifamily building. But they get them built, and then, you're kind of in this downturn side. So those are all Class A apartments. That has cooled. The pipeline has cooled. Again, let's go back to biz now. Where the level of units under construction in Dallas-Fort Worth is dropping to a cycle low, okay? That doesn't mean renters are fleeing. It means new supply is moderating because they've been hurt the last few years. So they're pulling back. You just can't throw the apartment community up, so and you can't time the cycle. They thought the cycle was great when they decided to build this very expensive project, and then they get into it and things aren't so good. So they pulled back on the supply. That's good for us as investors. We're investing in Class B and Class C properties. It's setting the stage for better rent growth and occupancy stabilization. If you want to just look to the number of units, the supply, again, is the lowest level since 2015. So I see that as a cycle low. About 30,000 units under construction in 2025, if you want to get into the actual numbers. But Dallas-Fort Worth added 46 to 50,000 jobs year over year. That's outpacing the national average. That's why this market stands out. And again, we don't invest in Class A apartment communities. Those are the brand new ones. They're very expensive to build. We're buying the ones that don't get built anymore. Class B, Class C. Why do we like those? One, they're not building them anymore, so they get rare and rare. But two, that's where working class renters live, right? They're ones that have the jobs. They need these places to live, and it creates great demand. Limited new supply, right? They're not building these anymore. That's one of the main reasons why we invest in them. Limited new supply is protecting occupancy. It's protecting rent stability, even when those Class A communities are feeling pressure. So cooling pipeline, that's good news for us. We're value-add buyers. A slowdown in new construction is music to my ears because it's taken downward rent competition. It's taken pressure off of that for us. It helps us grow net operating income. So to sum it up, new supply is going to flatten rent. The pipeline cools. The balance is going to return. And when the balance returns, we get a capitalization improvement.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
Not sure how to get started with real estate? Lifestyles Unlimited gives you the tools and education to move you forward with confidence. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007.
The lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Mike Harrison. I've been talking about real estate cycles that are historically 5 years from peak to trough to recovery. Personally, I think we're in recovery, but a lot of people a lot smarter than me also see us in recovery. And if you missed the earlier two segments, you can find us on the website, lifestylesunlimited.com, where I've thrown out some facts of people that are also, and these are people that do this at a very high level. that are saying the metrics are swinging in our favor in a way that we haven't seen for several years. Now, from my standpoint, as a member of Lifestyles Unlimited, I am seeing deal flow opportunities pick up like I haven't seen in 3, 4, 5 years. There are a lot of opportunities right now, good opportunities to invest with great operators. And there's just deal after deal. I mean, I check my email every day, and it seems every 2 days somebody's got a new opportunity for passive investors to jump in. So the deal flow has absolutely picked up. I've invested in 3 different properties over the last 9 months, and I'm going to continue that. So my activity as a real estate investor has picked up because I'm seeing better metrics. But what's going on out there? There are opportunities that are sitting on the table because there are motivated sellers. Now, let's use that term loosely. Motivated seller typically means they have to sell. These are people that, again, bought after the peak when everything started coming down, right? Interest rates going up, the inflation, everything that folks have been hit with, the economy, right? You look at jobs growth over the last 4 or 5 years, and they kept saying, oh, we're growing jobs. But then when you drill into that, you're like, the only jobs that are growing are government jobs. These are all government employees. That's not the private sector. We finally have private sector jobs being created over the last 2 cycles. And that hasn't been the case for the previous 4 years prior to that. So real jobs are being created, not government jobs that are paid for with your tax dollars. But there's a lot of people out there and companies and investor groups and that sort of thing. They bought at the high, interest-only loans, rates went up, inflation went up, you couldn't grow rent, there was no rent growth. Times were hard on people, right? The economy, some people even tell you we were in a recession. You know, whether we were or not, I can tell you it's been tougher, but the metrics are pointing up right now, especially in Dallas-Fort Worth. Now, I want you to focus on that right now. I'm going to make a case as to why, right? A lot of you out there are probably going, Mike, you're always saying right now, right now, right now. I say it because real estate truly is, at the end of the day, the best investment. We're making money 5 ways in a single-family property and 6 ways in a multifamily property. But some times are better than others. Del Walmsley will tell you that himself. 2008, the crunch, he says, was the greatest time he ever invested in real estate. And the man's been doing it well over 30 years. I wasn't an investor in 08. I wish I was. So you have motivated sellers. You've got real opportunities coming online. We've got lead investors that are engaging in this. Sometimes they've got to walk away, and then the seller comes back to them a few months later at the price point that the lead investor originally wanted, right? It makes the deal work. The metrics have to work. But I say right now, because these institutional investors, right, these giant REITs, these Black Rocks, et cetera, that have trillions upon trillions of dollars sitting on the sideline, and they are sitting on the sideline, and they are just waiting for that go signal, that green light at the quarter mile track to beep. And the institutional buyers are going to jump in, and they're going to jump into Dallas-Fort Worth. They're not jumping in right now. This is that window where the mom and pop investor like myself and numerous friends that I have and members of Lifestyles Unlimited, we see this window. We're able to get these. I'm telling you, that window's going to shut. It's going to slam shut because trillions are going to pour in. When they see the environment as buyer-friendly and go signals, they're going to start scooping things up left and right. What is that going to mean? When the institutional buyers move in, pricing's going to get frothy, right? Cap rates are going to compress, and the competition is going to tighten. Right now, the deals that we're buying, there might only be 1 or 2 or 3 buyers or very few buyers. When institutional money jumps in, there's going to be a dozen buyers, right? Supply and demand 101. If there's a dozen people wanting a certain asset, that tells you price is going to go up. When demand goes up, price goes up. But right now, we still kind of have that little window that we could sneak into before massive demand. Now, Cap rates, yes. When demand goes up, they're going to compress. If you remember, we've talked, and the valuation of an apartment community involves a capital rate, a capitalization rate. When those go down, the value of the property goes up. When demand goes up, cap rates will go down. So what I'm telling you, I'm taking a long time to say it, but I hope you're picking up what I'm putting down, is when these institutional buyers jump in, if we've already bought before they've gotten here, the properties that we have invested in will go up in value. But before they jump in, the opportunity to buy good assets at fair numbers is on the table today. I'm seeing it. I'm reviewing it. I'm engaging in it. So we've established demand. We've established the supply backdrop. Let's go back to economic growth. That translates into housing and apartment demand. And that's the core of why Dallas-Fort Worth is such a strong play. Jobs, growth, and demand for housing. Economic growth creates jobs. And the Dallas-Fort Worth market is attracting businesses and expanding economic sectors massively. This is not an accident. It's the result of profile advantages. Look at where Dallas-Fort Worth is. It's central to the country. We've got great highways in and out. If you've got a manufacturing facility or a transportation facility, Dallas-Fort Worth is great. You can easily head west. You can easily head east, north, south. We got I-35. We got I-45 coming in. You got 20 coming across. They're building a new highway in Texas. I don't know if any of y'all have seen that. It's going to go, I believe, all the way from Beaumont to Amarillo. That'll be pretty cool. Come through Wichita Falls. You get a new highway. Guess what happens? You got jobs. You got growth. You've got companies moving into these sectors. Again, it's just going to create more and more household formation. And that household formation helps us in the product that we supply. And as real estate investors, we supply great, clean, functional housing for good people to live. So the metrics are in our favor. The sustained migration, that's going to keep us long-term demand. That's why I like right now as a window, because, well, I'm investing in properties now based on today's metrics, right? When you do your analysis, you never want to get trapped into the, well, it'll be worth tomorrow kind of play, right? Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but you need to invest when the metrics make sense today, right? I like the cash flow. I like the upside. I like the business plan. This is based on today. Where the rent growth is, we're not able to get as much as we could in the past. We're not kind of doing a hope for the future. Don't bet on the future. Do your investment based on where that investment is at the very moment you buy it, right? It's gotta be improving. It's gotta be making money. It's gotta have cash flow. It's gotta have these. But the positive side gives us kind of some nostalgia, as if we were investing in 2013, 2014, 2015, where things just went up. We were on that growth cycle, and there's a lot of metrics in play that show us positive signs within that growth cycle. So it's very possible we could be coming out of this trough and into that recovery period. Sweet spot to buy, right? We want to buy before the institutional investors jump in, because they're just going to drive the prices up on everything. If we're already in when that happens, that's great news for us. So when I was doing my research to discuss the Dallas-Fort Worth market, it's funny, I came across something else, and I want to close the show talking about it. But I found an article, and this gets absolutely under my skin. I think you will hear it as we go through. But there is a proposal out there by a very well-known politician, and you'll know who it is because I'm going to share his name with this. But this guy actually came out with a proposal thinking it's a great idea to eliminate the 1031 exchange, if you can believe that. The 1031, if you don't know what it is, one, it's a method. It's been on the IRS books for over 100 years, but it's a method where a real estate investor can invest in a property, own the property for a number of years. Keep in mind, we always defer our taxes, defer. And then you could take that property, utilize a 1031 exchange, and go buy bigger, better, or more properties, again, deferring the taxes, kicking that tax can down the road. And we want to do that because when we pass away, if we still hold the properties, we also, before we pass, we have this tax obligation. It's an IOU to the IRS, and they're just waiting for us to sell that property so that they can collect all this deferred tax. But if you pass away and you leave that property to your heirs, they inherit the property at the stepped up basis, and voila, the tax obligation goes away. But there's an individual out there that thinks this is a bad idea. And I'll tell you, I can't believe this. They said it, but it's Mitt Romney. I think Mitt Romney's a pandering phony, and he disdains ordinary people. You can tell him that Mike Harrison said that. Mitt Romney grew up as an elite with a silver spoon in his mouth, insulated from everyday common life. His dad was a senator. This man grew up in a bubble. He's very, very wealthy. But he suggested that the 1031, and I don't even know how he equated these two. This guy is so out of touch. But he said, hey, let's get rid of the 1031 exchange, and we'll use that as a way to solve Social Security. Okay, Mitt. I mean, bubble or not. Let me translate what he says. What he's really saying is take away one of the most powerful, time-tested wealth-building tools available to regular Americans and pretend that somehow fixes Social Security. One, a 1031 exchange does not eliminate taxes. It defers them. Taxes are paid later. Again, you have the ability to pass that property on to your heirs, so maybe the taxes go away, but a lot of times they are paid at the end, okay? So everyone who does a 1031 doesn't actually go all the way through till the end. The smart investor does, right? If you've got family or heirs or people you care about, you're going to set it up in such a way that you leave the property and they inherit it without that tax burden. But again, the 1031 exchange, it's not new. It's not some tool that the super wealthy use. The super wealthy are so insulated. They've got so many other tools. They've got people working on their finances and their wealth and all that sort of thing. It's really a tool for everyday people, you and me, that we can use to relieve some of that tax burden for the time being, whether it gets paid later or whether you pass it on to your heirs. Who's really using 1031 exchanges? The reality check is people using 1031s, small landlords, retired couples, family investors, farmers, mom and pop owners. Who's not using 1031s? Hedge funds, Wall Street, or billionaires. They're not using 1031s. But everyday people, they bought property, one rental, then another, or grandpa bought the farm 70 years ago, put it in, maybe sold that and bought a bigger farm, used a 1031. And this tax buildup is such that if they just sold the property, the tax burden would be substantial. It would break them. I'll give you an example of someone using a 1031. This is pretty much your everyday. Someone buys a rental property for $200,000. They improve it. They manage it in a responsible way. And then they use a 1031 exchange and they go buy a $400,000 property a number of years. And then they do the same thing with that property. And they'll sell that $400,000 property. They'll 1031 it into a small apartment community. That's not tax abuse, Mitt Romney. That's long-term planning. That's how everyday people can get better in life and grow their wealth. And this is a man worth nine figures. I don't know Mitt's wealth, but I'd be shocked if it was less than $100 million. So Mitt's proposal isn't coming from understanding. You know where Mitt Romney's coming from? Detachment and arrogance, disdain for everyday people. Here's another tool, and we'll pile this on. We'll crush the middle class. He thinks that this is a problem to be managed. And literally the 1031 exchange is nothing more. It's for ordinary citizens trying to build a better life. And if you want more information on a 1031, reach out to me. We've got vendors that do 1031s, but it's just a fantastic tool as a real estate investor. And for Mitt Romney to come out and say, we should abolish the 1031 and save Social Security. I don't even know how he gets there. Social Security has its own laundry list of issues. Probably first and foremost is fraud. Why don't we get rid of the fraud, Mitt? Is that something you don't want to talk about? Or are you worried that if you go after fraud, you might lose some of the fringe voters that keep putting you back in office, which I don't understand at all. But the irony is Romney is not wealthy. He's extremely wealthy. And that's where this hypocrisy starts to sting. Mitt's massively wealthy. He made his fortune through private equity, complex financial strategies and structures. These are things not available to everyday people. Yet now he wants to take away one of the few remaining tools that normal Americans use to climb the ladder. I'll give you the contrast, okay? Here's where Mitt is. Here's his world. And again, he's got incredible net worth. He is a wealthy elite. He has an army of CPAs, I promise you. He's using carried interest. He's using corporate structures. He's using offshore planning. Whereas the average investor, you and me, the people that Mitt Romney disdains, and if he says you want to get rid of the 1031, you can tell he does. It's the average investor that uses the 1031 and not much anybody else. So the bottom line is, by Mitt saying that, who's he really hurting? Is he hurting the wealthy? No, he's hurting the everyday people. Getting rid of the 1031 would not fix Social Security in no way, shape, or form. Social Security is a problem of demographics. It's a problem of fewer workers. It's a problem of more retirees, right? You've got a bigger section of the population that are getting older. You've got a smaller section of the younger folks. So you've got less workers supporting more retirees. You've got people that have longer lifespans, okay? Getting rid of the 1031 isn't going to fix the demographic problem of the United States, but Mitt's so detached, or he's just throwing something out there to try to, again, cater to some of these fringe groups. I don't understand. And then I think the biggest problem with Social Security is fraud, right? Fraud. Turn on your TV. There is so much fraud out there that finally is, I don't know if it's getting addressed or corrected, but they're discovering it and they're talking about it. So that's a math problem not solved by real estate investors. If you get rid of the 1031, I'll tell you what you'll have. Fewer property sales. You'll have less reinvestment. You'll have slower neighborhood revitalization. You'll have less housing supply. You'll have higher rents. You'll have less economic activity, and you'll have lower tax revenue long term. You don't stimulate an economy by freezing capital. I hope I made myself clear. And along the way, I always want you to remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. See you next week. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at lifestylesunlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.